What up? This is Dart Adams, and this is episode 98 of Dart Against Humanity. So my previous two episodes of Dart Against Humanity were pretty much me trying to figure out things on the spot, on the fly. And even though I've been told that both episodes worked for many of the people that listen to them, I am super critical of myself. So those episodes sound and feel to me like, if you're familiar with The Chicken Connoisseur, the episode where he didn't have an editor and he did it what he called a cappella and there was no editing, that's what it seemed like. I like to be prepared. I like to have an idea of what I'm going to do. Sometimes I even like to have the title in place so I have foundation, because I'm someone who can go on an absolute rant / tangent and try to find the point. I don't like that. I like structure. It's bad enough I do this podcast without a host or a guest. It's just me talking into an iPhone XR. We don't have to worry about that this episode because I have something to talk about. And so for those of you that don't know, I got hacked. Now, also another thing you need to understand is that one of the reasons this podcast works for its distribution is because I record the podcast, I then upload it. I manage it through the website for Anchor. I fill in all the blanks, I name the episode, I write the description, go through the Anchor app through desktop. Then I make it live. Then it distributes. I usually have to wait anywhere between 30 minutes on average for it to distribute. That means the first thing I do is that I go to smart URL. So I post the link from Anchor first. Then I go to smart URL. Then from smart URL, I post that about 3 times at half hour intervals through my Twitter account. Then what I do is once we hit about 2 a.m., that's when I pull up the list of podcast distributors. It's about 50 podcast distributors. And I usually go through that list and I post them in order, in order, in order. Because if you post the same thing on Twitter, you know, it'll block you. So I switch it up every time. And this is how I distribute the podcast, through my Twitter account. My Twitter account that is verified. My Twitter account that has 21,000 followers. Well, my Twitter account got hacked. It happened Sunday afternoon. So around Sunday, 6:30 p.m. Let me walk you through it. So what happens is, the Boston Celtics are about to play game 6 versus the Miami Heat. It's an elimination game. They're down 3-2. And all throughout this day, Sunday, I've been getting, you know, hit up for things. So it's like, hey, Dart, would you like to do this? Hey, Dart, would you like to show up for this? Hey, Dart, I'd like to interview you for this. Hey, Dart, if you can contribute to this, here's the budget. Dart, we were thinking about doing this and your name came up. So if you're interested, hit us up. So this has been happening to me all Sunday and I'm trying to get all this stuff in before the Celtics game happens at 7:30. Another thing that happens is I joined this discussion on Clubhouse. By this time, I'm sure some of you have heard about some of the things that have happened on Clubhouse. There have been a few articles written about it, especially after the fuckery on Yom Kippur. If you're not familiar, just type in Clubhouse, Yom Kippur, anti-Semitism. There you go. Anyways, I'm on Clubhouse and there's tech people, there's VCs, there are people in all these different fields. And recently, the big wave is now music and culture, fashion, all these things. I came in with that wave. I've been on Clubhouse for a month. Right? A month. I dip in and out because I'll listen to conversations, I'll learn some things, and then I'll jump into some rooms and I'm like, no, 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 no. If you're familiar with that meme from Cat Dog where it's the mouse that walks out the door and then walks right back through the door, that's how I am a lot of times on Clubhouse. So I enter a room, I typically enter on Clubhouse, and it's packed. Everybody talking about music, film, culture, all these things. I'm usually one of the oldest people in the room. So I will interject here and there, but I spend most of my time listening. And oftentimes there's an option to leave quietly, and I leave quietly because these rooms go on and on and on and on and on forever. And even though they bring me up to be there to be one of the speakers, I usually have my mic muted and I let everybody else talk, and I rarely interject. Unless I'm like giving context, because the conversations are usually about things that my 45-year-old ass, I'm just not well versed in and I don't care about. What happens is one of the rooms is entered, I'm brought up, whatever. And then the guy says, all right, I'm ducking out. Wham. So everybody in the room looks at old man Dart and says, hey, so you lead the discussion today. I've never led a discussion. I've mentioned to you that every time I'm in these rooms, they're packed, full of people having a good old time, having their conversations. I lead it. So let's do a continuation of the conversation we had before about classic albums. This is a conversation I ducked out of because they were talking about albums that I didn't consider classic or haven't heard. By artists, I just don't think capable, for the most part, of making classic material. And then also, I also recognize I don't listen to these artists. They don't make music for me, so I'm not an authority. So I'm not going to shit on everybody's happiness or piss on their parade. Why don't I just do the adult thing and leave the conversation to the people that are enjoying it? Room's packed. Keep that in mind. I leave. So I lead the discussion. I start talking about classic albums. Not classic albums from a long time ago, recent classic albums. Because I figure if I talk about recent classic albums, then I'll be able to hold people's interest easier because these are younger people than me. So I'm going to talk about albums that came out between, I don't know, 2005 and now. So I talk about classic rap and R&B albums, and I switch the conversation mostly to R&B albums. Because I know I like underground and indie rap that likely these people have never heard of. So if I drop Wajid's the War LP, I know I'm going to hear crickets. Because what happens is when one person's talking, people mute their mics. And then when they want to talk, they unmute their mic and then they speak. And that's how you get your feedback. When you say something and multiple people are talking and people stop and let that person talk and then they go, that means they're engaged. If you say something, you drop something, and you hear nothing, that's a bad sign. Because now someone's like, oh, I guess I have to talk now. Or you have to come up with something that's going to get people interested and engaged. It's like being a stand-up comedian at an open mic and hoping one of your jokes lands. I think I figured out, yeah, that's a good analogy for what Clubhouse is like. Anyways, I start talking about all these classic albums that I think are classics by these artists in R&B and rap, and I just switched to R&B, and I'm talking about like Coltrane, not John Coltrane, C-O-U-L-T-R A-I-N, Coltrane. I'm talking about Gabriel Manzano Garcon, or whatever his name is. I'm talking about like Banks Goddess, you know? I'm talking about Jesse Ware. I'm talking about Sampa. I'm talking about Kalayla's Cut For Me, you know? I'm talking about Rochelle Jordan's 1021. I'm talking about everything from Tyler, Tyler McFerrin early riser. You know, I'm talking about Kamasi Washington, the epic. I'm talking about Terrace Martin, three chord fold. You know, I'm talking about albums like Roddy Rod, Cuba Aftermarket 1 and 2. So I'm talking about a lot of R&B albums, like I said, classic Wayna, you know, Musina, Yazara, the Purple James album. I'm talking about a whole bunch, like Jose James, Black Magic. Like, and I know that I'm on a roll because people are like, yeah, wow, people never talk about that album. Jesus never talk about this. And it's like Like Lee, you know, her first album people know about, but like So Sad, So Sexy, most people don't talk about in the same way, you know, or they'll talk about like Highest Coyote, you know, stuff like that, or Crank Bin, or I'm talking about like Tame Impala, Lonerism. Anyway, I'm just going, I'm having a time of my life talking about all these albums I consider classic, Little Dragon, you know, Little Dragon albums and stuff like that. And I'm just going in on all these albums and all this music, and then I'm talking about like Tyler the Creator and the internet and, you know, like all these guys and their records and stuff like that. Jet Age of the Future, stuff like that. And I don't realize it, but I'm losing the room. The same room I'm usually in that's packed when I'm not the one leading discussion is thinning out. And I'm seeing people with big names entering the room, listening for 5 minutes, then leaving. Then I start realizing what's going on here. Dart? People like to hear things that solidify or solidify or reassure them that the music they like or the music they think is great or good. What they don't like hearing is someone tell them about all the music that's great they've never heard of or by people they don't know exist, and to be told that they have multiple albums repeatedly. So basically I'm in here telling everybody how great my taste in music is and how y'all don't know shit and y'all suck. I don't think that until I realized that there are people with names hopping in the room, hearing the names I'm mentioning, and they're bowing out. And it's also a double thing because I realized that also it was two things. It was, I agree with everything you're saying, and I'm busy writing down everything you're saying, or damn, I don't know shit, let me bounce. Or Jesus Christ, this guy's gonna keep going on about albums I never heard of. I'm out. And it doesn't matter why, but the bottom line is I'm losing the room. Till there's like between 7 and 10 people left. Just like, yo, what was that name again? Yo, I love that one. And then it turns out it's down to 3 to 5 people who are agreeing with everything I said. Then I realized these 3 to 5 people are people that I've been talking to about music for the last 10 goddamn years. So I'm quite literally preaching to the converted. And it's at this moment I notice I have a DM. And I'm like, oh, all right, yo, I gotta go. Peace. To save myself the embarrassment of realizing that I have just emptied a room that's always full on Clubhouse. And I'm like, Jesus Christ, that was horrible. Anyway, I check my DM, and it's from one of my friends, somebody I've known for quite a while, damn near a decade, Dutch Rebel. Actually, more than a decade, Dutch Rebel. And she's telling me that she has this company that she models for, and she wants to hook me up. And it's kicks. And she knows I love sneakers. I'm somebody who's prominent in the sneaker community. And she was like, I'm going to bring you on. You're going to model kicks for this company. They're called EU Kicks. And just go through their catalog real quick. Pick out the first pair of shoes you want sent to you to rock. Now, mind you, all day I've been getting DMs and Gmails and texts from people kind of wanting to put me on to something, asking me my availability for something. They want me for this. They want me for a documentary. They want me to do this Zoom call. They want me to do this panel all day. And I guess that, you know, when you're hot, this is what happens. So I'm like, yeah, absolutely cool. And plus, I want to hurry this up because the game's coming on. And I'm thinking, this site looks kind of suspect. But this can't be like a fishing thing, you know. And it can't be like suspect because it's Dutch. And Dutch is tweeting from a account just like mine. It's verified. So if you were to, hijack a verified account, you couldn't because you have two-stage verification, right? And then on top of that, you can get it right back because that's what Twitter verifies for. So if someone takes over your account, it's like, how can you take over your account and change everything and not alert the Twitter verified people or Twitter support immediately? So I go along with it. The site's taking me a while to figure out something I want because it seems that like it hasn't posted anything new in like the last 6 months. But I think that's largely because maybe it has to do with COVID. Then I'm looking and I'm like, I only wear Adidas. So it's taking me forever to find something I would actually wear because all the recent shit that they have there is ugly. So I'm going on like 45 minutes looking on this site, looking for something I would actually wear. And then I'm like going back. And I'm like, they probably don't even have any of this shit in stock. So it's taking me forever to find anything. And also, I kind of want to hit Dutch and be like, you know what? No thanks. I'm good. And I also, while I'm doing it, she's telling me the process. I'm like, fine, I find something. I'm like, how about these? I'll rock these. I can rock these. This one pair. And maybe there's a secondary pair. So I sent a screenshot. I'm like, these joints, how about these? She hits me back, like, yeah, we actually have those in stock. So tell me what you want me to do with them. You want me to send them? And then what you do is you fill out this thing for models. So you have an account, and then we tell you when we're shipping it to you and when to look out for it and what have you, and then the next pair, what have you. Now, mind you, I get free shit on a semi-regular basis. Okay? So in a week, I get probably between 5 to 8 of these kind of DMs or texts. And my mailman or the mail people usually just drop everything. It's like, you know, they know that's Dart. You know, this is what he gets. I usually have at least like a stack of cardboard boxes from deliveries. Okay, it's common. It's old hat. So that being the case, I go to fill out the thing and I look and the site is kind of bare. And then it says model is coming. And I'm like, what the fuck is this? I'm like, this doesn't look right. But the thing it does is it says connect your Twitter account. And I figure if you're going to be somebody that they send free shit to, you kind of have to have a following and you have to have a verified account. So it's just like when I attach my account to my Audio Mac for when I upload my podcast and it, bam, it's verified. So you're a verified user. So you're a priority. So, yeah, we definitely need to send this motherfucker something. Or when I attach my Twitter account to my Anchor and bam. All right. So now it's synced. So when I go to do that, nothing happens. So I go back to my DM and I'm like, hey, yo, I don't think this login shit were King. Then it hits me. Dutch didn't DM me back. And also I'm like, why didn't I ask Dutch a question like, hey, yo, what magazine were you on the cover of? What's the name of our mutual friend who moved to California? What's your manager's name that I'm friends with and recently did a project with that didn't go through because of COVID-19? And we were both supposed to be rich by now. What's the name of your crew? Name every member in Bar Gang. I wasn't going to ask because you could probably Google that. Or I could ask which member of Bar Gang played Division I basketball. You know, I should have asked any of these questions. I didn't. And as soon as I tweeted, I'm like, oh shit. First thing I do is I go to change my password in my Twitter account. Can't. Locked out of it. I immediately go to send Twitter the form and whatever. Bam. I'm out of it. I'm like, fuck. And I remember that when you go through the process for that, it tells you your Gmail account and everything. So I go to my Gmail account, change the password, go to my secondary Twitter Gmail account, change the password. So those are saved. But I also text Dutch. I'm like, yo, Dutch, did you get hacked? Because you just DM'd me about some sneakers. She was like, they just got me. So, and I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, I got DM'd by OG Swagger Dick. And it took my whole shit over, took my Twitter account, and erased my entire IG. And I'm like, IG. And then I remember that they said that they also had a connection to IG Kicks. So if you connected your Instagram account instead of your of just your Twitter account, then they wipe your IG. But they take your Twitter account if it's verified. And what they do is they go through your friends list. And then they go through everybody and do the same scam to them. Now, what they didn't bank on was that I had a secondary Twitter account, producers I know. So I hop on Twitter's producers I know, and immediately I'm like, yo, I've been hacked. Dutch got hacked. OG Swagger Dick got hacked. DM'd her. DM'd me. I just lost my account. Warn everybody, do not accept DMs from Dart Adams. And then I start quote tweeting my own tweets and writing, my Twitter account got hacked. Don't take this. They blocked me. And then when I spread it to other people from that account, everybody who did got blocked immediately. And I'm like, shit. So what do? I go to IG. I go to Instagram and I post a video on Instagram that, yo, I've been hacked. I just got hacked. Don't do this, this, and this. These people have been hacked. Do not accept any DMs or whatever from that. Spread the word. Just one problem. My IG only has about just over 6,000 followers. What's the crossover of the people that follow me on IG to Twitter? Then the thing is that the advantage of having a verified Instagram account with over 20,000 followers is that when you tweet something, it spreads way farther. And the problem with having a verified Twitter account is that, well, the plus is having a verified Twitter account is that when you tweet something from that account, the reach is bananas. If I showed you how much my reach is monthly for my Twitter account, you'd be like, damn. And this is the metric for how people know they want to have you do things, show up for events, wear stuff for them, be the face of something, or even get your name on the jacket of a book because you have this following. Sure, you've put in the work for years and years and years and you're a trusted name, but you have this many people following you on social media. You have this many people that read a piece that you write when it's posted online. You have this following. That's a metric that people use. So that's why the Twitter account and it being verified is important. Just like if you had a IG account that's verified, that's why it's important. It shows you that people care. And the thing is that in any type of media, if you're going to publicize something, you need to know that people care. You need to know that people are engaged. So I'm trying to tell people, hey, please don't accept any DMs or any links from this account. Problem is, producers I know has about 10,000 followers. Not everybody is always active. And a lot of people that follow Dart Adams don't necessarily follow producers I know. And I have to tweet the accounts that are verified, that know me, with big followings, to tell them, hey guys, could you please tweet this and RT this to everybody and tell them that my account is hacked and do not accept any DMs from them? So I had to do that with Naima Cochrane. I did that with Shea Serrano. And it wasn't enough and it wasn't spreading fast enough because I started getting DMs and texts and tweets from people saying that they got hacked by me or asking if I DM'd them. Adam Man's Back hit me. That wasn't me. I just got hacked. Jose Vilson. No, that wasn't me. I just got hacked. My boy Dana Scott. No, Dana, that wasn't me. I was hacked. Matter of fact, we were talking about the Celtics during the Celtics-Miami Heat game as the Celtics got their asses handed to them during that 26-8 run, and I told you, I got hacked. Luckily, Dana didn't go all the way through with it. Some people sent me screenshots of the things they were saying. Wasn't me at all. Oh, for show? I don't write like that. I use punctuation. I capitalize things. You son of a bitch. If you're going to take my account and try to DM people, at least try to sound like me, you piece of shit. Anyways, that's neither here nor there. The people that did get got were my boy Nolan the Ninja, Daytuan Thomas, Chino XL. Through Nolan, they tried to get Marv One, didn't get him. They went after Illa J. Don't know if they got him or not. But I'm making a list of all the people. I'm doing updates on Instagram, what happened, where my account is, what's going on. People are hitting me like, I know people in the tech sector. I'll try to get them on this. And has anybody hit you yet? So, you know, everybody's turned to Scooby-Doo Kid Detective. You know, everybody's in their clubhouse. Everybody's the Bloodhound Gang trying to figure out a way to get the account back. I talked to my homie from Laterix, and he's pretty much telling me, he's like, hey, yo, I got hacked a while back, and it took me 2 weeks to get my account back, and I had to lean on my people from the Bay Area tech community to help me out. Twitter did next to nothing. And the thing is that Twitter also told me, and other people in the tech community told me that around each election cycle, people start getting hacked more and more, especially verified accounts, especially black folks. And if you have two-step verification on, it's easy. It's better for you. But they found this loophole that changes everything and locks you out immediately, so you can't even recover things in time. And once you lose it, Twitter support, and they kind of disbanded Verify because they stopped verifying accounts, so they're not up on, oh, something happened to these verified accounts. But I'm hoping at least somebody big enough something happened to that's going to move a needle and be like, hey, we need to start getting these accounts back. OG Swagger Dick hits me and he tells me, got hacked because he got a DM from Chevy Woods. And I'm like, Chevy Woods from Taylor Gang? He's like, yeah, I thought I was really talking to Chevy Woods. Now I'm really mad because there's nothing worse than getting hacked thinking your friend DM'd you. But when it starts with a motherfucker from Taylor Gang, oh my damn. Okay, on the other side. I lost my Twitter account with its reach that I built up over 12 years of tweeting and talking about albums and music and making jokes and doing a spot on or timely cultural commentary, live tweeting events, raising the ire of people. And it took me 12 years just to get over 20,000 followers on Twitter. Okay? Which helped me sell a book. Which helped me build a podcast. Which helped me do a whole bunch of other things. Like, there are people from a whole bunch of different sectors of the world that know me because they followed me on Twitter. However, ever since I got verified back in, I think, July. When did I get verified? Did I get verified before or after my mom died? Somewhere between 2015 and 2017. But anyway, ever since I got verified, I started immediately noticing something. More people entered my mentions than ever. A tweet that I did had suddenly a disgusting reach that I never expected versus before I got verified. I was subject to far more hate, far more bile, as disgusting leap in hate follows. If I would search my name when I had my verified account, I would find everything from people talking to me, to people tweeting me that I didn't see, to people talking shit about me in their tweets. So there are people that I'm like, yo, fuck you. And they don't know why. Also, they didn't realize at the time I had two Twitter accounts. So I would be on Producers I Know on one laptop or be on a handheld device with my account, and I would see them talking about me behind their backs, behind my back, to themselves. And then I had this whole weird group of hate followers that came over from, I don't know if you know Kill, Kill from Apartment 5B, his podcast, whatever. So he had like five or six people that like were fervent followers of him who hate followed me. And they would talk shit about me, but to each other. It was the weirdest shit. But like, think about that happening. Now, since I haven't had my Twitter account, I lost it Sunday night, 6:30 p.m. And it's Friday now. I'll tweet something. I don't get 50 responses. I don't get a whole bunch of retweets and likes. But I haven't had an argument on Twitter. Well, I had one all week. But the reason I had that argument on Twitter wasn't because of my account. What happened was my boy Will C was talking to me about your account and we hope you get it back. And some dude from the UK was like, that nonce Dart Adams, he thinks he's this, 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 and this, and he's a high muckety muckin'. He thinks he's like the Judge Dredd of rap, and we know Boston rap is Guru and this person and this person and this person, and he thinks he's the end all be all, whatever. And he's used like a whole bunch of syllables. Tosser, and I'm just like, you used a whole lot of syllables just to prove that you're an asshole. His response to me, not knowing I'm Dart Adams, is Dart Adams is the arsehole. And I'm going, no, from my perspective, it's you, whatever his government name is. I forgot it. And I usually remember everything, but he's a nobody. And then he says something else, and I say, I'm Dart Adams. Oh, he used an example about Ajax being warlord, Ajax wanting to ask the warriors why Swan's warlord. And I was like, first of all, Cleon appointed Swan warlord, and none of the other warriors disputed it. Matter of fact, when Ajax said he wanted to be war chief, everybody else was like, hey, Swan's warlord. And you remember what happened to Ajax, right? So that was a stupid analogy. And people are like, ooh, not 50 to 100 people like it was in my account. It was like 5 or 6. Ooh. So then he blocks me. And I'm like, so you didn't want to smoke. You talked all that shit till you found out it was me, Dart Adams. But it's gone now. That was the only exchange like that I've had all week. All week. I usually go through about 20 of those a day. So I haven't had the heat. I haven't had the anger. I haven't been fighting. I tweet something I think is funny. No response. I ask a question on Twitter. 3 people answer. On my account, it would have been a thread all day long. But the good and the bad is that I'm like, oh, this is how it is to tweet without getting all the hatred, all the snarky comments, all the snide comments, and people jumping in your at replies with under 200 followers. Is this what life could be like on Twitter? But then also the other part is that you realize when you don't have your Twitter account how little all of that seems to really matter, right? Because the thing is that when people do get that big thing or that big announcement or secure that bag, what's the first thing they typically do? Get off Twitter. I noticed when Howard Bryant started getting stuff acquired, he spent less and less time on Twitter. He would talk to me in DMs. When Bijan Bain started getting stuff acquired and started getting working in film and television, he stopped tweeting. We would talk in texts, DMs, or emails, or just straight phone calls. When Kathy Andoli got her book deal, the first thing Kathy did was spend far less time on Twitter. Then she spent like no time on Twitter. IG occasionally. But just to post something and go on about her day. And then I start going down the list of everybody I knew who, when they caught it, they got off Twitter. Action Bronson. TV show. Book deal. He had a blow up on Twitter about something. He was like, I don't need this shit. Gone. Didn't really miss it. Jesus and Meryl used to be on Twitter hard body. Now they're on there occasionally. Because they also don't have to be. The brand is strong. They got a book out now. Have I bought it yet? I don't think so. But I will. But like, anytime somebody secures the bag or does something big, they spend less and less time on Twitter. Because what happens is now you get in trouble and now you put that shit in jeopardy. Or you might say something that people are going to react to negatively. So you just stay off Twitter just to be safe. And you don't really need it, Because when you have a following big enough, you tweet one thing, it's everywhere anyway. And it means more because you tweet less. As time's gone on, I've tweeted somewhat less. It doesn't seem like it because I'm up at all hours, but I'm also working at all hours. I have 5 things going on right now. And Twitter hasn't deterred that at all because nobody interacts with me on Twitter. And the thing is that people are people up until like a few days ago, people were still getting hacked by my account. I haven't heard, the last person I heard that actually did get hacked was Chino XL a couple days ago. But I kind of feel like enough people know now that they're not engaging with Dart anymore. And the person who hacked our shit has to move on to a new account to actually get people. But it's just nuts how little you realize that, like, all these things really matter, right? Because another thing that I learned from my whole time, both like the event on Clubhouse that led to me getting hacked and post-hacking, is that, like, I was just sitting around one day, and you know how Netflix gets the new shows every week? Well, one of the new shows they got is a show called The Chef Show, another season of it. It's based on the film Chef, where is it Jon Favreau? He's like, you know, he's a chef or what have you, but like, it's the extension of it is his show that's on Netflix. The first one of the episodes that he has Christina Tosi, who is on, most of you will know from MasterChef Junior, and also like Milk Bar. It's like a sister, a restaurant to Mama Fuku, Milk Bar, what have you. But she said something that really hit me when she was talking about how she makes desserts and why she makes desserts and why she mixes the highbrow with the low, or why she won't go for a gourmet ingredient when she could just get the simple thing that works, that gives the taste that she wants. And she explained why she does that. She said, everybody deserves to be spoken to. And what you do is you do what people are familiar with and already love. And it's the easiest way to speak to people. And I'm like, oh, because someone recently told me this when I was pitching to them one of my book ideas that didn't go over as well as I had hoped. And they explained to me, Dart, when you're pitching books to publishers, they're thinking about how they're going to market it. They're thinking about where it's going to go in the bookstore. And they're thinking about what's already out. And then they're thinking about the things you're thinking about. How will it run over, you know, years and years? How will it stand up? How unique is it? What have you? Can you execute it well? But the other thing is that who's going to read it? You're thinking about people like you. Problem is, with people like you, that's a niche audience. And I've been told this and I'm like, no, it ain't. There's more people. And every time I do something and talk to somebody, they enforce, no, that's a niche audience. And then it hits me more and more. You have to widen up your scope and bring more people in. Because what you're writing for is a short line. And then I think about Graffiti Bridge. Why? Because in Graffiti Bridge, the kid, his club, he played for a small audience that didn't drink. Meanwhile, the motherfucking time, their club is packed. Okay? I believe their club was called Pandemonium after the album. You go to George Clinton's club, it's packed. But the kids club, that bitch almost empty. And what I was doing was, I mentioned in a previous podcast, some John L. shit. I was going to have an empty club. So I have to expand my idea and allow more people in so more people can get it, so more people can enjoy it. And it's not necessarily watering it down. It's doing something that I love, but widening my reach so that more people can enjoy it too. Why are you trying to sell 250 sneakers for an astronomic price? And then it ends up going to bots. No. Mass produce them joints. Make them comfortable. Put in all the things that you would love to be in a sneaker. And would make you proud to see mass people on the streets wearing them. That analogy works. You don't feel like selling out. You don't feel like you compromised yourself. You don't feel like you diluted your idea. And when that was explained to me, I reverse engineered my idea, expanded it, repitched it. And they were like, now that's a book. That's an idea that will not only get you people buying it, bridge multiple generations, but also end up in colleges and universities as part of a curriculum. And maybe even become a documentary. And I'm like, oh. Now, the very last thing I'm going to talk about is we went from October 1st to October 2nd when I do this podcast. Why is that? Important. It's October 2nd, 2020. The last day I worked a real job was at the Charles Street CVS across the street from Mass General Hospital Station on the Red Line. MGH Charles, 155 to 157 Charles Street. I worked in that CVS for 3 years, from October 1st, 2nd, 2002 to October 1st, 2nd, 2005. My very last day there, I kept my first ring in. So what happens is, you check in, the slip prints. Then when you check out, another slip prints. I held on to that for 3 years. Then I took my last two and I pinned them on the wall downstairs in the basement and wrote a note thanking everybody for my 3 years working at CVS. I was about to be, they wanted me on the track, the middle management. They wanted me to have my own store. I started there working overnight, got a disgusting amount of promotions in the shortest amount of time ever. And I was on the fast track to having my own store. And I realized I'm going to be 30 years old, a manager of a CVS, when that's not what I want to do. People would come into the CVS all the time, talk to me and be like, why are you here? Why are you here? Like, you're creative. You're this, you're that. You have all these ideas. You know all this stuff about film and television and music and history. Like, why are you here? When your own managers tell you that, they're like, why? Like, you're going to be 40 and 45 with kids and a wife on these calls with us. Like, is this what you want? I'm like, no. And when I was 29, July 4th, I told everybody that I was putting in my 3 months notice. And October 1st would be my last day working at CVS. And I gave them 3 months to find a replacement for me because I did that much work. I haven't worked a real job in 15 years. Now, mind you, the job I left had dental benefits, health insurance, and a 401k. And I was making so much money working there that I was making as much as the people who were working on salary with my overtime. And then what CVS did was they changed the truck deliveries and the shifts so I couldn't make overtime anymore. So what it did was it would force me, if I wanted to make more money than I already did, to take salary. Because you can make more money with salary if you're a manager, if you get store bonuses. But the things you have to do to get store bonuses will give you an ulcer. You have to go above and beyond. You have to try to get everybody to do the survey that comes on the ticket. And then there are even more spot checks to happen from regional offices and corporate. And you have to be involved in those. And I wanted to avoid that with my whole heart. So I was like, I know my future is not in this. I'm going to write books. I'm going to make albums. I didn't. I'm going to direct films. I haven't done that yet. I'm going to write for film and television. I'm going to write a comic book for Marvel. I'm going to do X, Y, Z. I'm going to write and direct the quintessential Boston film. I'm going to do all of this. That's what I thought to myself the day I left and walked home from 155, 157 Charles Street and walked home 15 years ago today. 15 years later, I'm talking into my iPhone XR telling the story. And next week is the 1 year anniversary of the release of my book, The Book of Dart. And it's also going to be the 40th anniversary of Prince's Dirty Mind, which I actually talked about earlier tonight on KCRW's This Album Saved 1980, which was a great experience. A lot of great stories, great interaction with the audience. I read everybody's comments. That flew by. That 75 minutes just flew by. Totally enjoyed it. Would love to do something like that again. And hopefully Hanif gets the opportunity to do another Lost Notes year. 1991 would be great. You know, 89 was what I was seeing in the comments a lot. Either way, and I think I kind of feel like that year, that whole season needs to be released in some type of audiobook format, because not only could you listen to Hanif, but you could read it along with him. It was great. I just love the stories that were told. Anyways, so that's this episode of Dart Against Humanity. Next week, I will talk about the Book of Dart. That'll be October 8th. And the following week will be episode 100, the final episode where I talk about everything I've learned in the last 2+ years doing this podcast. Remember, Dart_Adams Twitter hacked. Report is hacked as much as possible. Maybe then Twitter support will finally do something. I'm fully feel like by the time Dart Against Humanity is over, I will finally be at the end of maybe getting the account back. But the longer the time goes, the kind of less I care to know the truth. It'd be great if I get it back. If I don't, it's whatever. I've been on there 12 years. Anyways, thanks for listening, and one.